Welcome to Becoming Parents Podcast. I'm your host, Jen Taylor Campbell. I'm a birth and bereavement doula, as well as an adoption and surrogacy doula. Doula means woman who serves. And although I love happy births, adoptions, and surrogacy, the pro bono part of my business is in bereavement. I'm here to help you. I'm also mom of 18, yes, 18 children, with over 30 years experience in the trenches as a mom myself. We have a huge blended family, and I've also experienced the loss of our adult son. Remember, give a shout out to those brave enough to share their stories on how they have become parents. Let's dive in. Hello and welcome to Becoming Parents Podcast. I'm your host, Jen Taylor Campbell, and I am with Dr. Rebecca Diamond. Rebecca, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm also great. This is so fun. I just want to preface this. You're a doctor. You are a pediatrician, correct?
Yes, that's right.
I love this. Where do you want to jump into your story? I'm really excited about your story because you never hear from the other side.
No, exactly. That's kind of the gist of it. That's why I do what I do, to show you that other side and how flawed and human and, you know, just struggling it is, despite all the information out there, but how we can sort of make something positive from all of that. So yeah, I'll dive right in. Like you said, I'm a pediatrician. So, you know, went to college, went to medical school, went to my pediatric residency. I've always loved kids. I've always known I wanted to have kids. Always. I had a big family, siblings, always around children. I was the 12-year-old babysitter who wanted to babysit more, you know, and wanted to be in charge of my little brothers. I just always knew I was going to have kids. So life made it happen a little bit later than I probably thought, you know, not much later, but I was around 30 when I, you know, got pregnant. And I was in the middle of my residency as a pediatric resident, which, as they say, there's never a good time, you know, or the best time to get pregnant, but that's certainly not a great one.
No. My ex-husband's a dentist and we actually met during his residency, and it is intense. The hours are intense. What you're learning is intense, your rotation. I mean, it's the end of it for you, but it's also like, it's a lot. So no, that was not a great time.
but that's kind of how it worked out. I got married right before residency and it was that amount of time to feel sort of emotionally and financially ready, for both me and my husband. And, you know, it was busy, but it's what I wanted to do. And I had a lot of anxiety, you know, going into pregnancy. I've always had anxiety, in my life, but, you know, well-managed and with all the appropriate supports that I'm lucky to have. But I was anxious going into it. I was in the medical field. I was in the pediatric medical field. So very biased towards all the things that could go wrong, all the scary things that could happen, trying to get pregnant, getting pregnant in pregnancy, after pregnancy, and just in this very busy schedule, this very sort of overworked, somewhat under-supported, although I still had a lot of supports compared to many parents, but it just kind of got off to an anxious start, as I might say, you know, the whole journey. I had a miscarriage with my first pregnancy. That was really much more challenging than I anticipated it would be. Even though I was intellectually very ready for that possibility, being a doctor, but I felt really gutted by that in a way that surprised me. And then I got pregnant quickly with my daughter right after that. And what was already likely to be an anxious pregnancy was an even more anxious pregnancy, having just miscarried. So I also had some medical complications. I had hyperemesis. I had a complete previa. I had an emergent delivery. I had all sorts of things going on that just physically and emotionally, my body felt like it was under constant stress. And with the background of, I kind of was on a timeline to finish residency, the more I pushed it off, even if I was able to get accommodations, the more I would have to delay my career and even possibly lose job offers that were rolling in when my daughter, you know, I chose my current job when my daughter was like 2 weeks old and I was interviewing at 35 weeks pregnant and flying. I mean, it was just like, looking back, it's kind of like, why did I do all that? I don't know why I put myself through it, but I also realized that I felt in some ways trapped in in the set of choices I had and not able to really advocate for what I needed as a pregnant person and as a new parent.
Holy cow. This is...
I'm making it sound really dramatic, and it certainly was, but you know, I also was so supported in so many ways. I had a facility with the medical system. I had mental health care. I had a loving, supportive family. I had friends. So when I say it all on paper, it sometimes feels, maybe this is my own baggage, like I'm kind of being overly histrionic with this retelling. But there is a truth to the fact that routinely people, you know, me, other people, we go through this sort of physical and mental series of little mini crises and sort of are told like, well, that's just like normal, deal with it. Like, it's fine.
Which is part of the problem, in my opinion. I don't think there are any histrionics in this at all. I just think it's fascinating that, and I really want to point this out because so many moms feel so overwhelmed by all the things, right? And mm-hmm. here you are in the medical field with all the information, and that doesn't make a miscarriage hurt less.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Logic mm-hmm. and emotion don't play well in the sandbox together. They don't, it doesn't always make sense. And even with all the support and all the information, and look, your crazy was different than my crazy or someone else's crazy, but there's a lot going on. Like, yeah, should you have been flying to job interviews at 35 weeks pregnant and, you know, leaving the 2 week old to go? I mean, it doesn't matter because you did, but I feel like a lot of times women are just doing what's in front of them because we feel like we mm-hmm. have to. And even with support and extra knowledge from like the typical mom, it didn't, that mm-hmm. did not bridge the gap for you.
Absolutely. No, that's so perfectly said. I mean, it's the sense of feeling, like you said, like we just have to do this. And that even if we feel like we could advocate for supports, which not everyone can, I didn't even know what the full spectrum of supports were, or I didn't really understand with each decision, what was the thing I should be advocating for. And I'll give you some examples. You know, when I was postpartum, I had really bad postpartum depression and anxiety, and was very quickly able to advocate in some ways because I did know the right supports. So I was able to get, you know, I'm very fortunate, you know, advocate for my family, getting me same day appointments with psychiatrists and getting me with therapists, social workers, my own therapist, able to work as much as possible and get a little bit of extensions here and there. For some supports, but I didn't even realize until I'll say like maybe now, so 5 years later, the full spectrum of supports that I could have looked for and that probably were available to me that would have helped even more. And some of it is just in terms of how I was framing some of my parenting decisions. So I think that was really what sparks the next phase of my journey, you know, things like breastfeeding and sleep and all those things that you feel like there's this just yes, no answers to. And it took me some time to look back and say, wow, I should have, in my specific situation, actually stopped pumping earlier, for example. That was not the right choice for me to keep going. But I felt that it was so binary and I didn't even understand how to articulate or fully kind of appreciate the scope of what that was doing to me and my body. And I just assumed it was the right thing to do. And so I was just so overwhelmed postpartum. I felt like every decision I was going to make, you know, I was going to do it wrong. I was going to hurt my child. I felt totally ill-equipped. I felt totally like just lacking a basic confidence in myself as a person, which was kind of wild because I was a very confident doctor. Some of my reviews said I was too confident as a young woman in medicine. if anything, I was getting told that I, you know, was telling people who were my superior what to do, you know, all sorts of stuff. So confidence was never really an issue to me. And then I was also like, but I'm not only a doctor, I'm also good with kids and I'm smart and I'm loving. So why is this so hard to make these very basic daily choices? Why do I feel so eroded in just this parenting ability? And so it really was over the next few years and into today that I started this journey of how can we build that back healing myself by building it back, you know, sort of as a healing journey for me, but also for other parents, because as I became a practicing pediatrician, you know, and talked to more parents, I felt like, well, this isn't just some parents who are feeling like this. It's a lot of parents who are feeling like this, a lot.
Yeah. And it's crazy. I want to point out, because most moms are moms, right? And feel like, oh, they could have advocated or they could have asked for more, and you had more at your disposal. And what still kills me is that no one else was sharing information. I know maybe you weren't framing your decisions perfectly, but nobody was having the right, I think, conversations. I mean, does that make sense? Like, they weren't stopping and going, well, wait, take me through your day. Take me through your week. Take me through what your triggers are. They weren't even, because there are a lot of resources, but women from infertility to pregnancy to miscarriage on have to really fight to advocate for something they don't even know if it exists.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's crazy that you went through that exact same situation, even with more access to more.
I think that's exactly right. And, you know, I think it's almost like the exceptions that prove that. So the minute you said that and people weren't giving me the information or framing it, immediately what popped to mind was kind of a few different providers who did do that. And they really stand out as the exception. I had an incredible OB who I just, when I say that she saved my life, it's literally true because she delivered an emergent pregnancy, but it's also figuratively true. I mean, every time we met, every decision was, why are you worried about that? What's the big picture? I was gaining a lot of weight. Are you worried about that for a health reason? Because you shouldn't be. Your pregnancy is looking healthy. Is that an issue with body image? We can talk about that later, kind of thing, or talk more with counseling. I mean, it was just so personalized and big picture and so empathetic, and just really set the stage for like, oh, this is just what it should be. This is just what it should be like. Or when I met with a very specialized postpartum perinatal psychiatrist and then continued to be lucky to have them, every time was like, I understand that you want to provide breast milk because you're doing 24-hour calls in the NICU and you feel like that's what you can provide to your child. However, we have to talk about the fact that you're not sleeping and it's painful. And there is no way, if we look at this big picture, that the amount of breast milk you're providing is somehow worth your integrity as a parent. That doesn't make any sense. Yeah. And I would have kept pumping for months and months and tortured myself. Not that pumping is torture. It was just my specific situation. It kind of was. It was a masochistic exercise for sure. And they were like, we really have to stop. And they kind of prescribed that I stop pumping, you know, which you don't hear that. You just hear, even in the field of pediatrics still, I feel like we're still so focused on these seemingly like prescriptive, tangible things to do rather than saying, what's the big picture of health for you and your infant? How do we support that? How do we give you the information, not just the frequency of risks and benefits, but the magnitude of them, how that fits into your daily life? I felt I really couldn't find that. And I was sorting online and it was even messier. It was either pseudoscience and misinformation, but people were coming from a good place. They just wanted permission to relax and do what they wanted to do, but it tended to come at the expense of minimizing science and saying that things don't matter when they do. And then there was kind of my side of things, the pediatric side, that was so rigid and so prescriptive and so in the weeds in a way that doesn't really make sense. You can never have a one size fits all because you don't know the situation. And then there were sort of like offshoots of each of those and the data driven this and the guilt-free that. And I just was like, how are parents getting any information? Like, it felt like you either had to smash your phone or drown in this information. Right. And I really, that is what pivoted me towards doing this book that I've written, Parent Like a Pediatrician, and doing my online advocacy with the parenting guidance. Cause I just wanted a way to give parents the information they needed in sort of the big broad strokes, but with real science, with real expertise, but ultimately a guidebook that didn't tell you exactly what to do, but just empowered you to make choices.
Which and is awesome. You're talking about pumping and how it was a masochistic exercise for you individually. And then there are other moms that need to be given permission to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. Yeah. Like, take any situation, circumcision, you know, the golden hour, mm-hmm. a pregnancy, how you want your baby delivered, like all of these things. And there is never, there are a million right answers and all mm-hmm. dependent on the situation. I want to go back a little bit with the knowledge and information that you had, and you had the first miscarriage and then having a pregnancy that kind of, I don't know what the medical issues were, the urgencies were, but what do you think having the amount of knowledge that you had made that harder or easier? Because I don't know.
I think it's always a double-edged sword for me. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think in the pregnancy situation, it made it harder because I didn't really, well, it speaks to your point of no one is really talking about this stuff. So if I just have a baseline of pregnancy as being this like magical thing where women are glowing and doing their bump photo shoots. And I had some co-residents, I love them so much, but they were just like literally having, at least on paper, an easy pregnancy, and they couldn't wait to take their pregnancy photos, and they're like looking gorgeous and their arms are so skinny. This is just, you know,
your perception,
deranged pregnant me, my perception, right. And they're holding their bumps and they say how much they love it. And then they have a million successes breastfeeding and lose too much weight. Like, it's all there on paper. And then I'm sitting there feeling like, I literally don't know if I can move to like get to work without, you know, falling over or throwing up. And I feel like I don't even recognize my body. I'm nervous about the million complications. It feels like, to your point, if you don't know a spectrum of experiences, you don't understand that yours maybe kind of falls somewhere in there. It mm-hmm. feels just really extreme at the time. And then you latch on, or at least I latched on to all the horrible things that could go wrong. I mean, I was rotating through the NICU and the PICU and all these places. So it made sense to sort of pathologize the pregnancy.
Right.
And there's really not a space for medical pregnancies that aren't pathologic, I feel like, in our society. And this is something that I really advocate for. You know, I would love to have a positive, quote unquote, natural feeling pregnancy, but I couldn't have had that. I had life-threatening conditions. And so, you know, I was lucky to have my OB kind of rein things in, but there was just this tendency to catastrophize, this tendency to feel like this isn't a good pregnancy. It can't ever be a good pregnancy if it starts out like this. So it became a little bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy in that sense. But yeah, I think it's really hard when you have this kind of knowledge. Sometimes it's great in parenting and it gives me a lot of perspective. Like, someone was telling me something about, you know, is it okay if your daughter gets this cupcake? It has dye and a lot of sugar. And I was like, I literally don't care. Like, I treat, like, not in a dismissive way to parents who worry about this stuff, but to me, it's like, oh, that is so far on my list, like, of bad things that could happen. That's not even like feed her dirt today for all, like, she'll be fine.
Well, that part's true. We all kind of muddle through all of that, but yeah, your list of acceptable and unacceptable things is different. And you're right. We see this snapshot of idealism, especially online, you know, and isn't it perfect? And isn't she beautiful? And and there are some pregnancies that go that way. I mean, you know, I threw up violently for 16 weeks and then I didn't even feel like a human being till 20 weeks. But then I actually enjoyed my pregnancy until I got so uncomfortable, I wasn't enjoying it anymore. But I had this window of, you know, utopia. My pregnancies did not look like that. And if you compare yourself against what you think is the norm, you're never going to, in anything, including pregnancy, you're never going to meet that, I don't think. But you're in a tougher situation where you know every single bad thing. And you're experiencing a lot of them.
Right. And I think, you know, I'm glad to see a little bit of a clap back to the idealistic parenting and pregnancy stuff online, and a lot of very good open complaining, and not even complaining, but expression of the negatives. I do right. think we're kind of at this turning point right now. It's funny, I've been talking about it a lot with my friends as I do more writing and think about how can you actually enjoy parenting while still appreciating that it can really suck a lot, you know, parenting and pregnancy in an under-supported way. I think we're at a weird spot where it's hard to find that middle ground of, yes, all these horrible things can happen. We need to advocate for more support. It's okay to be honest about it, but it's also okay to enjoy things. Like you said, some people do enjoy pregnancy, part or all of it. And it's really, the goal should be to enjoy parenting as much as possible. And you don't have to say it's all good or all bad. You know, it's really hard to find that space, I think, especially online, because we know intense emotion in one direction is what drives clicks and views and all that stuff. So I've really been struggling to come to a place where I can feel myself and empower parents to feel like two things can be true. You can have conflicting feelings at the same time. You can think this is the most incredible creature in the world and you're going to explode with love, but you can also think it's so annoying that they will not stay in their bed for 20 minutes more. And they say they're so hungry, and then you go and make them a waffle and they eat none of it. And they really just wanted you to get out of bed, and you still have 20 minutes on your alarm. And this is so exhausting. Like those things, you know, someone might have had that experience.
A million times. Well, I know that I was shamed at one point really horribly by someone I was close to, because I talked about my kids, like, you know, how are your kids doing? And I'm like, he's such a jerk, or he's such an a-hole, or like whatever. I'm just, and it did not mean I don't love him. I don't love being a parent. She's not great. It's that there yeah. are those things about it. And I was shamed horribly. And I kind of thought, well, that's too bad for you, because I knew both things could be right. But most people don't right. realize, like, they either feel like a horrible parent if they're not Pinterest ready all the time. Mm-hmm. It's just such an odd dichotomy that no, you can be exhausted and hate it and your kid's a little jerk and be so grateful that you have kids and want another one. I mean,
yeah.
And I think we've realized in society that both can be true simultaneously, but it's navigating that can be tricky, and the backlash from that can be tricky.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the thing that I couldn't agree more with that. It's not a society of nuance these days, I'll say. We're not that comfortable living outside of the black and white. I think the thing that's helped me most in terms of reframing this to myself and others is really deciding when you're stressed at something, you're not mad at your kid, and you're maybe not even mad that you're a parent. You're probably stressed with something that's temporary, innate to parenting, or if it's a more lasting pattern stress, it's probably society that's failing you. It's probably the fact that we live in a very parenting unfriendly society, especially in the United States. I will say, like, it took me a long time to realize the full scope and the ripple effect of the ways in which we fail parents and how that trickles so much into your everyday life. You know, it can feel like, okay, so what? We don't have postpartum leave. Like, obviously that's bad, but maybe that only affects people for a few months postpartum. Well, that's not true. That trickles into your everyday life. You know,
yeah.
It's obviously bad in and of itself, but my not having adequate postpartum leave meant that my healing journey postpartum was much more fraught, had long lasting ripples, you know, took much longer, rippled into my ability to be a confident parent later on, changed my sleep, you know. So it's this constant undermining of parenting by society. And then the flip side is, well, what are you complaining about? You should like being a parent. You chose to be a parent, and you cannot want to be a parent in a society that doesn't support you, but still very much love being a parent. You can have both of those things happen. So I try to channel parental sort of anger and rage and upset and anxiety into outrage at society, And then yeah. remind yourself, you're just going to make the best decisions you can in this world. So it's not whether or not you should breastfeed in a society that supports breastfeeding. It's whether or not you want to keep breastfeeding in the exact place you live in space and time. It's not about the good old days or how things could be or all this nonsense you see about what's natural or ideal. It's just about this moment. And that really, really helped me, especially looking back and then going forward, say, okay, well, like I would love to give my child this like wonderful, well-balanced meal every single day. But I also just can't tonight. Like I just can't. And I know that being anxious about it is counterproductive. And the fact that she has peanut butter and jelly one more night for dinner is fine. Like it's more beneficial than if I sat there and beat myself up over how to make a shopping list, you know, when my husband's out of town and forcing myself to cook and I don't like cooking. And it's much better if I make her peanut butter and jelly and then we literally do arts and crafts together and then go to bed early. Like that's a much better night for me. And it doesn't matter that in some parallel multiverse, there's a version of me who has the resources to get my kid to eat broccoli. That's not current, you know, multiverse me. That's not right. me in this universe.
I love the multiverse. Yes, there's some part of me somewhere doing everything right, but that wasn't my reality. And I think you're right. We also do the best job that we can in the moment with the resources and abilities that we have. And that can look different with other kids. I mean, people mm-hmm. that have multiple kids, like, wow, if I had known this back then. And yeah, that's true. Maybe things would have been different, but we don't. And it's not just a better night for you to have the peanut butter and jelly. It's a better night for your daughter too, because yeah. she has happy mom and not stressed mom, you know, or yeah. whatever that looks like. So it's been 5 years since you've had her. No other kids?
Mm-hmm. No, I do not. Still recovering. No, but yeah, that's, you know,
I think that's important to say.
I think that's definitely part. I mean, honestly, we all know COVID came and the yep. pandemic, and that any thoughts that I sort of have had little coming up for air moments where I thought, oh, I could do this again physically and emotionally. And then, you know, I'm a New York City doctor during a pandemic, or there's ongoing pandemic issues, or, you know, or what have you, or transitions. But no, I mean, honestly, I love that question because, well, you didn't even ask me, are you going to have more kids? But that's the question I get a lot. And I also, you know, I'm very open, so I can understand why people ask me that. And the reality is, I don't know, right? Like, even if I tried to get pregnant right now, you never know. Like you said, if, you know, it's out of your control. But also, you know, there's so many reasons that people might be ambivalent about having another child, might be really wanting to, but haven't been able to due to like a secondary infertility, or maybe are just like, absolutely not. I need to be the best parent for my child and the best person for myself. And I really want parents to feel, you know, I never would have imagined that I would have waited at least this long to have another kid, because I always, like, you know, talking about taking it all the way back, I always came, you know, I came from big family and I always thought I wanted kids, and I thought I would be the one wanting 100 kids and someone would have to stop me. And then life was just so different, you know, and in this version of the multiverse, I'm the one who has to really, you know, I had to be a lot more thoughtful about it. And I'm lucky to have access to the reproductive resources that allow me to have this choice, to take this time, you know. I had to focus on me and my family and my daughter. And that's been hard. That's been hard for me to look at the expectations of what I thought my family would look like now and what it does, and realize, you know, I made really good choices for my situation. And, you know, be damned everyone else's expectations, including my own.
That is true. Tell me, I want to finish up before we end this. Tell me about the book. I know all the links are in the description. People can find it, but tell me about the book and the easiest place for people to find you.
Yeah. So I live, when I'm not working in the hospital as a hospital pediatrician, I live on Instagram, for better or worse. Like I said, it's a very mixed bag. So Hopefully you'll find me there at Parent Like a Pediatrician. I do answer all questions and I try to put, you know, good information out there. Hopefully I can be in a limited, very tight list of resources that you have so that you're not going crazy with too much information. And then my book came out recently. It's been a real labor of love for the past few years. Really started, its inception started right postpartum when I was just crying after doctor's visits to my mom. I remember in the car saying, I'm so overwhelmed. I don't know what to do. I need something. And she says, you'll write something. You'll turn this into something. And I said, okay. Cause I had already done some writing and I love writing. And it's really just, it's for the first year. It's going to be your one-stop shop. I hope that you can just kind of flip through as you are preparing for your kid's arrival or, you know, taking care of your kid. It's relatively quick to read. It's a lot of personal stories, but there's a lot of information where I will dive into the real science behind all the pediatrician recommendations and more than that, tell you what I did so that you can decide, oh, I see that she decided to stop pumping, for example, because of this. But for me, that's not really an issue. So I'm going to do this. And this is the data behind that. And hopefully, like, my ultimate goal is that you'll look through this and then you'll go to your pediatrician and you'll have the background to ask your best questions, to work with your pediatrician for your situation, and then to just make choices that you feel really good about. I just want you to feel good about your choices because I know you can do it. I really do. And I know that you care about your kid if you're listening to this and if you're, you know, looking for resources and reading my book. You love your kid and you're smart and you're capable and you just need the right information. So that's why I put this book out there.
Thank you so much, Rebecca. I really appreciate you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate you. And I'm so excited to be here. Thank you.